Welcome to Wisdom of the Elders. I'm Arlie Nesky. Three boys played in the late September sun. The families were gathering camas roots and preparing foods for the winter in a nearby village. This was the homeland of the Nimiipuu, the real people. Today, they are known as the Nez Perce. Their territory once comprised most of the Snake River drainage in today's north-central Idaho and corners of Oregon and Washington. They fished, they gathered roots and berries, they hunted deer and elk in a maze of lush valleys and mountain terraces. On this afternoon, September 20th, 1805, the Nimiipuu numbered about 7,000. The three boys scattered when they saw the bearded white men riding toward them. Captain William Clark led an advanced team of the Corps of Discovery to search for food and contact the people he called the Chopinish, or Pierced Noses. Clark handed off his rifle and cornered two of the boys. It may be difficult for us today to imagine the boys' terror as Clark attempted to calm them, giving them little gifts. National Park Ranger Diane Malikin explains.
They had never seen anybody like this. Lewis found him, befriended him, gave him the pieces of ribbon. The boys went running back to the village to tell the big news.
Soon, the light-eyed strangers were invited to sit in the lodge of a headman. Villagers crowded into the teepee to have a look.
What they thought was, these might be some people visiting us from the past. They might not be people from the here and the now. And they might have a message for us. To me, the value in even that thought is because of how spiritually minded people were at one time. There really was no delineation between natural and supernatural. It was all one.
If there was a message, it was, your life is about to change. Within 30 years, Presbyterians had established a mission at Lapway, Idaho, and soon a schism had formed in the tribe between Christians and traditionalists. In 1855, the Nez Perce ceded about half of their homeland in exchange for a reservation of over 7 million acres. Another treaty in 1868 took away more land. Traditionalists grouped around the Joseph Band in the Wallowa Valley of northeast Oregon. Ordered to leave and move to the reservation, Joseph's followers held out for a decade. The government sent General O.O. Howard to Lapway. When a group of young Nez Perce men attacked some white settlers, Howard marched the army into the Wallowa. What followed was one of the most famous campaigns of the so-called Indian Wars. Joseph, with his brother Olukut and the war chief Looking Glass, fled with their band across 1,800 miles of mountainous territory towards Canada, fighting several bloody battles along the way. Finally, surrounded by superior forces, starving and believing all their people would be killed, Joseph surrendered just a few miles from the border, saying, "I will fight no more forever." Joseph and his followers were permanently banished from their homeland. Despite this tragedy, Chief Joseph's spiritual philosophy of peace and nonviolence has caused people from all over the world to remember and honor him to this day. I'm Arlie Nesky, and this is Wisdom of the Elders. Becoming a tribal elder is more than just getting old. There's a lifetime of lessons which call for much reflection and soul-searching. There's also commitment to preserving tradition and passing it on to younger generations to keep the heartbeat of a nation alive. Horace Axtell is a Nez Perce elder who's seen wars, racism, and his share of personal loss. But he's also experienced reconciliation, friendship, and forgiveness. In today's Elder Wisdom, Brian Bull shows how Axtell's gift to find the silver lining behind any cloud has helped his people thrive and celebrate their heritage.
Horace Axtell has spent his life cradled in the Valley, a rustic canyon area in northern Idaho, sliced deep by the Clearwater and Snake Rivers. Axtell's silver-braided hair shimmers like sunlight on water, betraying his status as an elder. Axtell says it wasn't an easy path. There were connections to be made with his family and culture, and even a reconciliation. This meant seeking out someone who had hurt him deeply as a child.
I always remember my mother telling me, that man standing over there is your father. Why don't you go tell him hello? So I was just a kid, not very tall. But I went over there and he was talking to some of his friends, and he looked at me, never said a word. Then all of a sudden he turned back and kept on talking with his friends. And I stood there for a little bit, and finally I walked away. That did bother me a lot in my life. Growing up without a father is difficult.
Axtell never gave up on his father, but duty called after America entered World War II. Axtell joined the Army after learning his father had enlisted. The two never met overseas, but Axtell's mother died while he was away.
And when I came back in 1946, I had no mother to come back to, nobody waiting for me at the bus depot or anything. And our house was gone, and life was pretty rough there for a while. Finally, I found grandmother. I really loved my grandma. It was so good to be with her because the language just made me feel so important and strong again.
But his grandmother passed away, and Axtell went to work at the Potlatch Lumber Mill, a large employer for many locals. Through his coworkers, he learned that his father was living in the town of Kamiai and was doing a lot of heavy drinking.
So I found him, and he was drinking. And I told him, I come up here, I heard you've been drinking a lot, and I come up here after work to look for you and offer you to come and live with me. I'll take care of you the rest of your life. I said, you're my father, and you'll always be my father, but I want you to understand one thing. I want to forgive you for not being my father when I was growing up. So this bothered him, even though he was drinking, and made him cry. And I guess finally he decided he'd come and live with me.
Although their relationship was often tested by drinking binges and sudden disappearances, Axtell says over time, he and his father began to connect more and more as the men shared their native tongue. This led to an unexpected turn in his father's life.
Well, one day, they was having a evangelistic meeting, I thought, here at Spalding Church right over here. And he asked me if I'd bring him out there for that. So I brought him out, and he sat down in the front, and they start singing these translated hymns, and I could hear him singing. And so I think, well, it's pretty close to the end of the service, so I went out and got in the car. It was in late November. I got in the car and to warm it up so my dad wouldn't be cold when he got in. He was getting up in age. Finally, he came out all by himself, and he come over and got in the car, and he told me in this verse, he says, son, I became a Christian. My heart felt so good. I'm glad, I said. So we went on home, and we went to bed, and I went to work early the next morning, and I come back from work that night, and I looked in his room, and he was reading a Bible, and so I left him alone. So that's where his Christianity began.
Axtell began learning more of his family's history throughez father and from many of the Nez Perce elders. Tribal stories, legends, and the language were shared in the sanctity of the Sweat Lodge, where Axtell got to know many of the tribe's most prominent members.
And some of the men folks were there that were veterans of the War of 1877. And I had the honor of sweating with them, and I listened to them tell stories and talk inside the sweat house. They always talked about this man called Tim Spussman. So one day when I was asking my father all these different questions about things about, and I told him this story about people talking about this man. And I looked over and he was quiet, and I looked at his eyes and he had tears in his eyes. And I said, well, what's the matter, Dad? And he said, That's my great-grandfather.
Axtell had reconnected with his father. Now he was connecting with an ancestor. He kept asking around about his great-grandfather's story and got an insight into his courage during the Nez Perce War of 1877.
And one incident during the war down at Big Hole Battlefield, when they got attacked down there that morning, my grandfather, he got behind a big tree, and he sat down and he began to sing his power song. And he sang there all the way through and hard and loud as he could, start beginning to chase the soldiers down the hill. That's when I realized again that he was a powerful man.
Axtell's knowledge of both the traditional language and history of his people gave him a good reputation among the Nez Perce elders. He recalls seeing a car full of elders arrive at his home one night. Five women and two men got out and approached Axtell with a special request.
They said, we come down to talk to you. We're really concerned about the old way of life, the old spirituality of our people, the old Nez Perce way that they themselves found out how to worship. And we have strong ways. And especially, we're worried about the burial of our people. There's a lot of our people that don't belong to Christianity. But when they die, they have to be buried somehow, so they take them to the church and with a church funeral. We know that they were believers of their ancestors, the old ways. So they said, since you can speak the language real good, we're proud of you, because we hear you talk. So what we want to learn from you is how you feel about this way. We don't want to know right now, but I want you to give you time to think about this. So I thought about it for a couple of weeks, and I ran into one of these old ladies. But she asked me, I made up my mind, and I told her right there, I said, I'm willing to try. She said, I don't know a thing about this old Nez Perce way of life, the spirituality that we have, but I'm willing to try to learn.
Axtell has learned so much that he sought out by both tribal members and non-Indians to talk about history, language, and traditional Native values. But he reminds himself that it took perseverance and love to connect himself to his family and tribe, and he wants others to think positive as they attempt the same path themselves.
I always go back to the time I forgive my dad. You're not supposed to walk around with a negative feeling. Because if you do, whatever you're doing, you think you're doing the right thing, but this negativity is right with you and it is going to be there unless you let it go. Don't do that. So I try that. We have to try to go around these negative things and do what we're supposed to do. That's our way.
For Wisdom of the Elders, I'm Brian Bull.
Brian Bull is acting news director for Wisconsin Public Radio and is an enrolled member of the Nez Perce tribe. He lives with his wife, two kids, and three cats in Madison, Wisconsin. Coming up in Speaking Native, linguist Don Addison teaches us a little Nimiipuu. In Sacred Landscape, Judy Bluehorse Skelton shares her love of the timeless embrace of the Tree of Life. In Tribal Rhythms, Nico Wynn explores the newly restored music of Native collector Sam Morris. And in Health and Healing, Rose Hybear looks at how the Nimiipuu are working to defeat a killer in Indian country, type 2 diabetes.
Me being diabetic, and I thought, well, I'll get over this.
Me come chat culture. Me tell you about the past. I come and tell you about the future. No dibby dibby DJ. I am on what betcha. Lyric that me teach you, that the one that'll get ya. I tell you about the things they will not see. Honor them away a government policy. They strip on me land at a Peabody. This a very serious. This is not unfunny. And we come. And we come, then we go, and then we go.